Welcome to The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland. Let's break down the remaining 13 NFL games for Week 14. I love and appreciate your feedback every single week, but especially last week. I know my audio was wonky, so hopefully it is fixed now. Overall, when I've asked for some feedback, opinions have been divided on the ordering of games. If you prefer the order to be by time, let me know. Or if you like how I've been grouping them, which is based on their projected outcomes, aka spreads, tell me that as well. I'm going to try out a few different things just overall for the next few weeks heading into the playoffs and probably through the playoffs. And I'm all about testing out what works best for you. So you have to let me know what that is. The one note that was constant, faster is better. 30 minutes tops. So with no further ado, let's get into the Sunday and Monday slate for week 14. Then maybe we'll talk a little bit more at the end. Divisional mismatches are a first grouping of games. The Bucks hosting the Saints is game number one. Tampa Bay is favored by 8.5 points. The total 42.5. My model says Tampa wins by 10, 26-16. Tyler Shuck against zone defense, that's the first part of the note. His dropback success rate is 42%. That would rank sixth lowest if he were qualified, which he will be soon. All four of his interceptions have come against it as well. What happened when they matched up in week 8? Well, the Bucs played zone 82% of the time, their third highest rate this season, and Tyler Shuck had just a 58% completion percentage, a sub-50 passer rating, and both of those happened to be his season lows. New Orleans rushing when Shuck or any quarterback is in the shotgun is the second part of the note. They've done this 56% of the time on their rushing attempts this season, the fourth highest rate in the league, where they've earned a negative 0.7 rushing yards over expected per rush, and that's the fewest in the NFL. New Orleans also has a negative 0.14 EPA per rush out of this configuration, the fourth fewest. What do the Bucs do against it? They've allowed just 2.5 yards before contact per shotgun rush, the fewest in the NFL. They've allowed exactly zero rushing yards over expected per shotgun rush this season, the ninth fewest in the league, and a negative 0.05 EPA per shotgun rush this season. That's 11th fewest. Todd Bowles, we talk about him stopping the run. This is where we're seeing it. Bottom line, the Bucs to win by more than 8.5 in a slightly lower than expected overall game. So for me, it's 26-16, 10-point win for Tampa, 42 total points. That's less than 42.5. Brings me to the one to watch. It's Chris Olave's longest catch to net at least 24 yards. We know the Bucs are going to blitz. They do it third most often, 35%, but they also have allowed 49 plays of 20-plus yards. Only Cincinnati, the New York Giants, and Chicago have allowed more. Denver at Las Vegas is where we will go next. The Broncos are favored by 7.5. The total is 40.5. My model says Broncos by 9, 25-16. Denver's pressure rate, 39%. It's actually sixth highest. They were number one till last week when they had their lowest rate of the season against Washington. Actually, it was their lowest pressure rate in a game since 2023. Their 27% pressure to sack conversion rate, though, still is second highest in the league. They've also allowed just a 26% dropback success rate when they've gotten pressure on opposing quarterbacks. That's fourth lowest. And Geno Smith, he has a negative 0.81 EPA per dropback when pressured. That's fewest in the league, along with just a 29% dropback success rate when he's pressured. That is seventh lowest. He also was pressured on 38% of his dropbacks against Denver in week 10, where he went 3 of 7 for 8 yards with a pick. The Broncos to win by at least 8 points in a slightly higher than expected scoring game. That is the bottom line. I have Denver 25-16. So 9 points and a 41 total point game, which brings me to the one to watch in this matchup, which is Bo Nix to throw for at least 2 passing touchdowns. Right now, Nix's passer rating is just under 86, which is the worst by a quarterback who's won at least 80% of his games in a season since Vince Young. However, his underlying metrics show an uptick coming in his passing efficiency. Next up is the Rams at the Cardinals. LA is favored by 8.5 points on the road. The total 48.5. My model says Rams by 9, 28-19. The note here has to be on the Rams defense because I haven't talked enough about them. And LA has a 35% pressure rate this season, which ranks 12th best. And they've allowed a negative 0.58 EPA per dropback with pressure this season, which is the seventh fewest in the league. Jacoby Brissett has a negative 0.52 EPA per dropback when he's been pressured. That is eighth fewest. And he has just a 47% completion percentage against pressure. That is 11th lowest in the league. Now, this marks three favorites to exceed their number in divisional games, which I kind of hate because truly anything can happen in these. But I have LA rebounding from last week's loss at Carolina with at least a 9-point win, 28-19, which means a lower than expected win since I have 47 points projected and the number is 48.5. The one to watch here, it's Blake Corum to have at least 34 rushing yards. Now, Kyren Williams is projected to play. He's had some fumble issues and he was injured last week. He didn't fully participate in practice this week, but the Rams sophomore back Corum showed us something in his reps that is a huge trait Sean McVay values. He's explosive. On his touches, Corum has an 18% explosive run rate, which paces the NFL among backs with at least 80 carries. All right. Since we had so many animal entries this week, I'm stirring them all up right now. This is our final November fundraising effort. So I'm going to pick two because it's for animals, for goodness sake. Here we go. All right. I got them both. The first one. All right. Thanksgiving week. Bobby and the Strays. That's the first one. Okay. Next one. Rags to riches. All right. Awesome. Thank you to everyone who played along with my animal rescue situation here for the month of November. Stay tuned. I'm going to do more like this coming up shortly as well, because it's great to help out some animals. Maybe we pick another sort of charity effort for the playoffs. I don't know. Let me know what you think. This next group of games I'm calling out of the playoffs, or basically out of it, but we're still into it. The first game in this category is Miami at New York, as in the Jets, where the Finns are favored by 2.5 points, and it is a 40-point total game projected. My model says Miami wins 21-20. Tua Tagovailoa has faced zone coverage on 85% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate by any quarterback since 2018. And he's averaging 6.9 yards per pass attempt against it. That's seventh lowest in the league. And has all 14 of his interceptions against zone. The Jets, their season average of how often they use zone is 62%, which is the fifth lowest in the league. They played man 44.4% of the time in week four in their first matchup against Miami. That is the highest man rate that Tua has faced this season by 15 percentage points. What happened? Well, he passed for 177 yards, two touchdowns, and no interceptions. So maybe they will play more zone. I have the Dolphins extending their three-game win streak to four games, but only by 1 point, which is a closer margin than 2.5 points in a higher scoring game than expected. For me, Miami wins 21-20. That's 41 points. That's more than 40 points. Making my one to watch here, Tyrod Taylor to rush for at least 26 yards and throw at least one passing touchdown. Do I like picking an over when Miami's defense has allowed just 14.3 points per game during their win streak? That is the fewest in the NFL over that period. No, but Taylor's ability to create with his legs and not take negative plays increases the potential for the Jets to score and, almost more importantly, limits turnovers. That has been a key for Miami's defense during this win streak because they have 7 takeaways in their last three games after having 7 takeaways in their first 9 games combined. Tennessee at Cleveland is where we'll go next. The Browns are favored by 4. The total in this one, 34 points. I have Cleveland winning 21-16. It's rookie versus rookie. These two train together ahead of the draft. And the fun fact here, they have the same number of quarterback wins at 1, despite Kim Ward starting 10 more games than Shedeur Sanders. Cleveland, here we go. Their defensive pressure rate, 39%, fourth highest in the league. And their 28% sack rate with pressure this season, that's the highest in the league. They have allowed a 25% dropback success rate with pressure this season. Guess where that ranks? Oh, lowest in the NFL, aka best. And Cam Ward, he has been pressured on 38% of his dropbacks. That's the eighth highest rate in the league. And he has a negative 0.63 EPA per dropback when pressured. That is fourth fewest in the league. Ward, do I even need to talk about this? Okay, so his 27% dropback success rate when he's been pressured is fourth lowest. He's taken all of the sacks. So part of this is why I have a 5-point win for the Browns, 21-16. That is greater than the 4-point line in a somehow higher than expected scoring game overall. My 37 total points forecast is more than the 34 that is projected to be the total. Why? Well, because of Shedeur Sanders' ability to connect on deep passes. He already has four completions of at least 30 yards. Now, the Browns' defense also drives, giving the offense favorable field position. Speaking of the Browns' defense, the one to watch here, Myles Garrett, to earn at least two sacks. He's four sacks away from breaking the single season NFL record, which right now is 22 and a half. And his 19 sacks are currently more than three full teams have. That would be Cincinnati, Carolina, and San Francisco. They all have 18 or fewer sacks. His average get-off speed is 0.72 seconds. That is the fastest in the league. And let's talk about the Cam Ward sacks. He's been sacked 48 times. That's third most by a rookie in a team's first 12 games since 1970. Next up, it is Seattle at Atlanta, where the Seahawks are 7-point road favorites. The total in this one, 44.5. My model says Hawks by 8, 27 to 19. Now that Seattle has the league's top pressure defense, we got to talk about it. They're pressuring opposing quarterbacks at an over 40% clip. They average 17.3 pressures per game. That is the highest since the 2018 Eagles. And they're the only team with six different players to have at least 30 pressures apiece. Their 23% blitz rate is the sixth lowest in the league, and their 37% pressure rate without the blitz, so they don't even need to rush five, that's second highest in the league. They've also allowed a 42% dropback success rate when they don't blitz. That's ninth lowest. And Kirk Cousins, small sample size, but he's just 7 of 19 for 55 yards when pressured on dropbacks without the blitz this season. He's averaged just 2.9 yards per pass on such dropbacks. That's second fewest in the league. And he has a negative 0.76 EPA per dropback when pressured without the blitz. That is fourth fewest. Bottom line here, I have the Seahawks winning by more than 7 points. I have 27 to 19, so 8 points in a higher than expected scoring game. I have 46 total points, which is more than 44.5. Sam Darnold's big play potential drives this higher than expected score, as his 9 yards per attempt average and 7 completions of at least 50 yards are both the most in the league. This leads me to the one to watch here. It is Jackson Smith and Jigba to reach pay dirt. I know he didn't catch a single downfield pass last game, so 10-plus yarder. That was against Minnesota. But even so, he still has 324 more downfield receiving yards than the next closest receiver. I know JSN will see some AJ Terrell, who's allowed just 0.5 yards per coverage snap. That is the fewest among corners. But other than against Teteroa McMillan, who he shadowed on two-thirds of McMillan's snaps, he usually doesn't do a ton of meaningful shadowing, which means there are plenty of opportunities for JSN to eat. Washington at Minnesota is next, where the Commanders are 1-point road favorites, and the total is 42 points. My model says Commanders win 23-21. Let's talk Commander quarterback scrambles for the note. Mariota. Anyways, I asked Logan, he said it's Mariota. Let's just do that. But Jaden Daniels scrambles a lot, 24% of the time. That's the highest rate in the league. Marcus Mariota, 11%, just below the league average of 13%. With scrambles, Washington has a 60% dropback success rate. That's highest in the league. And it follows that their 0.45 EPA per dropback with scrambles is also the highest in the NFL. Minnesota has allowed a 77% rushing success rate to quarterback scrambles. That's the most in the league, most generous. And a 42% dropback success rate, which is 13th highest. So they're generous both in the run and the pass aspect of scrambling. I have Washington winning by more than expected as the bottom line here. I have a 2-point win for them, 23-21, in another higher than expected scoring game. The why for both aligns here, and it's Washington's ability to keep their quarterback from getting too much pressure. That's why it's higher, and that's why they are winning by more than 1 point. Minnesota's defense has the second highest pressure rate at 40%, and they are second in the NFL just to Seattle, and they have the number one blitz rate, just under 50% here. We know Brian Flores is going to blitz, but we just saw how Cliff Kingsbury can scheme to nullify this. Washington held Denver to their lowest pressure rate, not just of this season, but since 2023. It was sub 20%, making my one to watch here in what figures to be JJ McCarthy's return is for both teams to score in the first quarter. Doesn't need to be a touchdown, but points will be earned by both teams. McCarthy plays best in the scripted portion, and both defenses have flaws that can be exploited. It's confidence picks time. I'll give you a second to see these. Remember, these are only for who wins, not with the spread factored in or on totals. Both of those percentages are available on Numbers Game, NUMBERSGA.ME, where you can also get individual player projections for the top quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends. But remember, these are just who wins, binary, win or loss. Nothing more than that. The rest of that stuff, it's on numbers game. This next grouping of games will absolutely shape the playoffs. These are divisional games with big consequences, as in the winner of this first game will take sole possession of first place in the AFC North. It's Pittsburgh at Baltimore, where the Ravens are 5.5-point favorites. The total in this one, 43.5 points. I have Baltimore winning by 7, 26-19. Let's talk about Pittsburgh using quarterbacks in the shotgun to run the football. They've done this on 42% of their rushing attempts, the 10th highest rate in the league, where they're averaging just 3.9 yards per running back rush from this configuration, 7th fewest. Baltimore's defense has allowed a negative 0.37 EPA to running back rushes with quarterbacks under shotgun since week 6, second fewest in the league, and just a 37% running back rushing success rate since week 6. That's 7th lowest. Bottom line, I have the Ravens by a touchdown, 26-19. That's 45 total points. So again, it's a game with a higher number than the line, which is 43.5. Does my gut like a high scoring game? Absolutely not. Pittsburgh hasn't completed a pass of 20 plus air yards since week 9. They're 0 for 10 on them. And Lamar has gone 2 games without a passing touchdown. Ugh. But the data, which is unbiased, shows that the potential for the passing game to be effective for Baltimore against the Steelers drives the day. So a greater than expected win and a high scoring game. This makes my one to watch, Lamar Jackson, to have at least one passing touchdown. In weeks 1 through 10, he had the league's best passer rating at 127. It has been just 63, which is second worst since week 11. So maybe he's not 100% healthy, but paying Mark Andrews does give me a clue that they will accommodate and adjust for their former MVP and make the passing game more effective and efficient in this one. Next up, it's the Bears at the Packers. This is a big one. Green Bay is favored by 6.5 points at home, and the total is 44.5. I have an 8-point win for Green Bay, 27-19. Let's talk about this Jeff Hafley-led defense that has the 9th highest pressure rate, is 36%. It features Micah Parsons, who leads the NFL with 70 pressures. He is, by the way, the only player to have at least 20 pressures, while also being double teamed at least 20 times. And that stat stands not just for this season, but since Next Gen Stats started tracking. Caleb Williams has a sub 42% completion percentage when under pressure. That's 5th lowest in the league. So what about when Caleb Williams scrambles? We've seen him do it at the second highest rate, 26%. And Green Bay, they have allowed just 108 rushing yards to quarterbacks on scrambles. That is the lowest in the league, along with just 5.7 yards per scramble run. That ranks 3rd fewest. They also held both Jalen Hurts and Jaden Daniels to fewer than 25 scrambling rush yards each this season. Bottom line, I have the Packers with a greater than 7-point win. I have 8 points, 27-19, meaning also more total points in this matchup. I have 46, and the number is set at 44.5. Why? Even though Green Bay has allowed 14.3 points per game to division opponents in 2025, that's 2nd fewest in the NFL, Chicago has allowed 32 points per game against their division rivals. That is the most in the league. My point here is just to illustrate that my model does love Chicago's ability to turn the ball over. They pace the league with 26. And if they turn Jordan Love and company over, that would be the path to upset. But the Packers have the fewest giveaways in the league. They have just 7 total. In fact, Jordan Love, he has the highest passing touchdown to interception ratio at 34-2 and passer rating at 110.5 as a starter in week 11 or later since at least 1950. Which brings me to the one to watch here. It is running back Josh Jacobs to reach pay dirt and also to have at least 78 rush yards. It is hard to nail down the Packers' identity on offense, but Jacobs on the ground is the path of least resistance and also decreases the odds of having any turnovers impact the outcome of this game. The winner of this next matchup will take over first place in the AFC South. Right now they're sharing it, but it's going to be the Colts or the Jags after this next matchup. Indianapolis is favored in Jacksonville by 1.5 points, the total 47.5. My model says Colts by 1, 24-23. Remember, this is just the first matchup between these two this season. Let's talk a little Jonathan Taylor. A reminder, he leads the NFL in rushing yards with 1,282, rushing touchdowns at 15, and scrimmage touchdowns at 17. Jacksonville is allowing 82.4 rushing yards per game. That's fewest in the NFL and fewest in a season in Jacksonville franchise history, though. No player has had 70 or more rushing yards in a game against the Jags this season. But let's go a little deeper here, because the Jags have allowed negative 0.02 EPA per inside rush to running backs. That's eighth most in the league. They've also allowed a 46% inside rushing success rate to running backs this season. That is seventh highest in the league. And Jacksonville has allowed an explosive run, so one that goes for at least 10 yards, on 10% of inside rushes this season. That's the 11th highest rate in the league. The Colts average one rushing yard over expected per inside rush. That is the second most in the league. They also have a 0.07 EPA per inside rush, the most in the league. And their explosive run rate on inside runs is 13%. That is the highest in the NFL. So the mismatch here is on inside runs. So why only a 1-point win for the Colts 24-23 in a somehow lower scoring game than the number? I have 45 points and the line is 47.5. Well, both teams need the run to anchor their offenses. I am no doctor, but I don't know how you can play with a fracture in your leg and somehow it, quote, heals while you're playing. Daniel Jones for the Colts, that's the situation. My point is, slowing down the pace for Indy and leaning on the run first principles that make Jacksonville successful, that's the formula for both of them. Which brings me to the one to watch here. I kind of love this one. It's a tight end. It's Brenton Strange to catch at least four passes. My model values Strange's ability to help with run blocking or on downs where he isn't the subject of the pass at a very high level. He's in the top 10 at his position in overall tight end value this season. Four receptions is the part we see in the box score, but watch him on all downs and you're going to see why this guy is so valuable. For our last grouping of games, we're going to do games that shape the playoffs, but this week it doesn't necessarily change who leads the division, but kind of it could be considered as maybe someone loses playoff odds or they go down a lot. Maybe they could miss the playoffs is what I'm trying to say. Let's start with Cincinnati at Buffalo, where the Bills are favored by 5.5. The total is 52.5. My model says Buffalo wins 30-23. I'm pretty sure you can guess where I'm going for the analysis on this one, but let's talk about what happens when Buffalo runs the ball when their quarterback is under center. So when the running back runs the ball, the quarterback's under center, something they've done 83% of the time this season. That's the second highest rate in the league. They've earned one rushing yard over expected per rush. That is fourth most. 1.6 yards before contact per rush. That is second most. And how many explosive plays do they get? A 12% rate of runs that go for at least 10 yards in this scenario. That's the eighth highest rate. The Bengals have allowed 1.4 rushing yards over expected in this scenario, the third most in the league. They've also allowed 3.8 yards after contact per running back rush when quarterbacks have been under center, the fourth most in the league. They've allowed an explosive run on 11% of such rushes. That is the 10th highest rate. Don't get me wrong. I love the Bengals story. I love how tough Joe Burrow is. I love tracking him and Ja'Marr Chase. But I also love tracking Josh Allen, whose team forecast to win by a touchdown. That's more than the 5.5 points that is projected. It's also slightly higher scoring. So I have 53 total points projected. The line is set as 52.5. Why do I have this? Well, Josh Allen, he's been sacked 28 times. That's sixth most in the NFL. We know the O-line is banged up. Cincinnati has only managed to sack opposing quarterbacks 18 times. That is tied for the second fewest amount in the league. The defense has also allowed the most points per game at 31.2 and total yards per game at 410. Buffalo at home, they've averaged the second most points per game, 32.5, and total yards per game, 399. Joe Burrow also has three passing touchdowns in 9 red zone drives, one passing touchdown in each game played this season. You get it. And by the way, Joe Burrow is 2-0 against the Bills. I understand that's a very small sample size, but I think a lot of offense in this one. Which brings me to my one to watch. That's Ja'Marr Chase to get into the end zone. I like him for at least 90 yards as well. He leads the NFL in targets with 131, and that's despite missing week 12 due to a suspension. He also has 438 yards after the catch, which is the most among wide receivers. And he has 100 or more receiving yards in 2 of his 3 games where Joe Burrow has been his quarterback. And while he may see a lot of Christian Benford, who has traveled with number 1 wide receivers in 5 of his last 6 games played, and by the way, Benford is killing it. He's allowed just a 35.1 passer rating in those 5 games. This reflects, so this being Ja'Marr Chase to have a big game, reflects the strength of Chase and Burrow finding new ways to succeed together. And for the record, I think you could have fun selecting a two-touchdown or tracking a two-touchdown day for James Cook as well. Eagles at Chargers is next. The Eagles are favored by 2.5 points on the road, at least for now. The total in this one is 40.5 points. I say for now, we'll get into that in a second. I have Philadelphia winning this game 22-20. Stat notes first, and then some surgery notes to follow. Philadelphia has a 23% blitz rate this season. That's seventh lowest in the league. They've allowed a negative 2.7 completion percentage over expected, which is the fourth lowest in the NFL when they don't blitz. They've also allowed a 43% dropback success rate when they don't blitz. That's 12th lowest. Justin Herbert has been pressured on 42% of his dropbacks when he hasn't been blitzed. That is the highest rate in the league. His six interceptions on such dropbacks are tied for the sixth most. He's averaging 6.6 yards per pass on these dropbacks, and that is the 13th fewest in the NFL. Okay, those are the stats. So here's what I want to say. As of right now, Justin Herbert forecasts to play. He got hand surgery this week. It, quote, went well, whatever that means when you have to get a plate in your hand. But let's just talk about how it changes things. He took zero snaps under center after suffering that injury last week against the Raiders. So we're going to see a little bit of change in how he operates from both with his line and also handing the ball off. Now, on the other side, Jalen Carter, he got shoulder surgery. He is out for this game. So that changes the potential to run. I'm not sure which running backs will be healthy and able to play. So for your fantasy football purposes, just keep track of that one. But everything changes with those two huge centerpieces being banged up, surgeried, I think that's a word, or potentially not 100% if they play. Again, we know Jalen Carter isn't playing. Bottom line in this one, I have Philly winning 22-20 in a higher than expected scoring game, 42 total points, which is more than 40.5. Why? Because the Eagles forecast to convert third downs at a higher rate due to an increased run potential. And on the other side, with no Jalen Carter, the run game forecast to help not pressure the quarterback, probably Justin Herbert on the other side. The underlying metrics for the Eagles, who rank 28th on third down right now, suggest that an increase in run potential is coming. Only 28 of Saquon's 198 carries have earned a first down. That's the fewest among all players with at least 150 carries. He's also been stuffed on 24% of his carries. That's the second highest stuff rate. And Ashton Jeanty, by the way, he is number one. I'm not going to pile on to the offensive coordinator onslaught that you see online, but this is the moment for that turning point that he's talked about in his pressers, meaning Saquon Barkley being so close, this is where it forecasts to happen. Which brings me to my one to watch. It is a Saquon Barkley touchdown anytime, because running against the Chargers is a better value proposition than passing. And for the last game, but certainly not the least game, Houston at Kansas City. Kansas City is favored by 3.5 points. The total in this game is 42 point. And of course, if Kansas City loses, in my model, their odds of making the playoffs drop down under 20%. And nobody tell my mom about that. But on the other side, I already told you I have Houston winning the AFC South eventually, not in this particular week. So does the shift happen in this particular week? Or is Marianne, my mom, still happy? Turns out Marianne's okay. Kansas City wins 22-18. But how does Kansas City overcome the number one scoring and total defense that's allowing the lowest opponent passer rating in the NFL at 74? And Patrick Mahomes is working with basically a new offensive line, and he has a career low 41.2 passer rating under pressure this season. Well, the answer is that Patrick Mahomes carves up zone defense. The Texans play zone at the 12th highest rate, 76%. And they're great when they use it. They allow just 6.2 yards per attempt. They've also given up just the second lowest completion percentage when using zone at 60%. But Mahomes is a master against zone. In this season particularly, he's earned the third most yards per attempt at 8.6. He has a 71% completion percentage and the second most total yards in the league against zone defense. It's almost 2,400. For the Chiefs to win, they need to clean up penalties, especially offensive holding penalties. And Patrick Mahomes will likely be forced or have to or choose to use explosive runs and scrambles to target the area of the Texans defense that is the most vulnerable. This is a game that forecast to potentially be first in Mahomes, second in Mahomes, as well as third in Mahomes, maybe even fourth in Mahomes. But this is where he absolutely thrives. He's 5-1 in his career against either the number one scoring or number one total defense entering week 10 or later, and this includes the playoffs. I have Kansas City winning by 4, which is more than the number. My total score is 22-18. That's 40 total points. That is less than the forecast number of 42 total points because my model still doesn't project the Texans' offense to outmatch the Chiefs' defense. The one to watch here, it's Mahomes. Let's just go with kind of the easy thing. The number is set at 23 rushing yards. I think he tops that. It's like over 30 is very likely in this matchup. We're getting to that time of the season where some of the unsung best players don't get talked about enough because either their team is out of the hunt or potentially they don't play in a position where you really talk about their impact. But not us. We love all of the players here, not just skill position players, not just the guys who get all the shine in the national media. Let's fix that right here. Here are 5 stats to tell your friends this weekend. Number one, Raiders edge rusher Max Crosby leads his position group with 38 run stops and 21 run stuffs this season. Those 21 run stuffs are the most by an edge rusher through 13 weeks in the Next Gen Stats era. Number two, Seahawks left guard Gray Zabel. He has not allowed a sack in 337 pass block snaps. That's the third most pass blocking snaps without a sack allowed among all guards, both right and left. And overall, he's allowed just the 5th lowest pressure rate at sub 5%. He's killing it. Number three, Vikings inside linebacker Eric Wilson has the highest pressure rate, 24%, of any player to have rushed the passer at least 100 times this season. He's done it 119 times, making him one of just 2 off-ball linebackers to have crossed the century mark. Now, if you look specifically since the Vikings week 6 bye, what has Wilson done? He has a 26.4 pressure rate, which is almost 6 percentage points higher than the next closest player. Who's that player? Micah Parsons. His pressure rate is 20.6 over that time period. Number 4, the other off-ball linebacker. Well, it's the Falcons inside linebacker Caden Ellis is the other guy who has at least 100 pass rushes. He has 131. He ranks 5th in the NFL with an 18.3 pressure rate. And number 5, Jags corner Jordan Lewis has allowed just 4.7 yards per target in coverage this season. That ranks 2nd fewest among slot corners. Now, he's allowed 25 or more total yards only 2 times this season. Are you ready for who those 2 players are? Well, one was Ja'Marr Chase. He allowed 3 receptions for 48 yards against him. Who's the other one? Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who he allowed 3 receptions for 26 total yards. In week 13, which was his first game back from a neck injury that he suffered in week 9, Lewis allowed just 2 receptions for 9 yards on 3 targets. If you see a player who looks like they're killing it and you want to know their stats, or someone we should just highlight because I haven't talked about them enough, let me know. Put it in the comments. I would love to give you all of the data. Let's add it here because we love shining a light on the guys who don't get enough national media attention right here on this show. That is it. That is the show for week 14. Thank you, as always, for hanging out, for your time and energy, for the feedback, and being on this awesome journey together. And by the way, just being awesome in general. I'm going to try out some new stuff over the next few weeks. So please collaborate with me, leave questions, comments, feedback, anything that you want to know, because I want the show to evolve to be the best content in the best structure as possible. So thank you for coming on this journey with me as we get there. I will see you back here for week 15's TNF Tilt.